ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Joey Galloway and Kevin Agande.
Welcome to the ESPN College Football Podcast. It is January 6th, Thursday, as we are fast approaching Monday night in Indy between Alabama and Georgia. A phenomenal show coming your way. And before we get to Joey Galloway, we talk about his picks, and we get into a little bit of Michigan and the rumors around Jim Harbaugh before we get to his breakdown of Alabama and Georgia, and also the inside information from Alex Scarborough and Chris Lowe. Two things I want to mention. First, listen to Swaggoo and Perk with Marcus Spears and Kendrick Perkins. New episodes every Tuesday, wherever you listen to podcasts, or watch the show on YouTube. Also, watch NBA Today, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app, or listen to the show as a podcast. Enjoy, Joey G. We got the picks. Taylor comes from off the top rope, and we talk a little bit about Booger's hands. It's a good one.
Is it a touchdown? Yes!
The ESPN College Football Podcast.
You know, there is nothing better than starting 2022, a new year with Joey Galloway and Booger McFarland. That's what I had the pleasure of doing on Friday night in Miami. Good to have Joey with us here. And Joey, a lot to kind of dissect here as we get ready for Monday's game in Indy. I want to get to the game in a moment, but I do want to start with this hot rumor. And we started hearing rumors, I think, in Miami of this Jim Harbaugh thing, you know, where he's potentially, there's just conversation that the NFL could be right around the corner after having such a successful season where he finally, you know, checked all the boxes. And that is beating Ohio State, winning the Big Ten, getting into the playoff. And one of the storylines in this conversation and these rumors is taking the pay cut and the NFL's knocking. And if you look at some of the teams, if there's an opening in Vegas, there's an opening, you know, with the Giants. And I know they've talked about Joe Judge. That a guy like Harbaugh could leave and leave Michigan. When you hear rumors like that coming off of what Michigan just did, the best season under Harbaugh, what was your initial reaction?
That this is the best way for Jim Harbaugh to get his money back. Every single time one of these coaches gets an extension, it's their name is rumored to be somewhere else. And so, Kev, I'd appreciate if you start dropping some rumors about me being wanted to go to another network, okay? Because we can work this out, Kev. So you tell me when your contract is about to end, and I'll secretly drop some information out there that Kevin Agande is wanted by the Weather Channel.
Yeah. Oh, the Weather Channel. That's my option.
Yeah. You go to like the History Channel or something like that. So like every single time it comes this time of year. If I'm Jim Harbaugh, his agent, whoever it is, I would absolutely drop as many rumors out there as I possibly can, true or not, because it just gets your name out there and it makes Michigan say, hey, we better take care of our guy.
Yeah, and context here, of course, he took a massive pay cut and, you know, half of the salary he was making the previous year. I think everybody was celebrating Ward Manuel's decision on patience, because I've always come back to the Michigan conversation. Who are you going to get? Who else are you going to get? Who else is out there? If you're going to say, let's move on from Harbaugh the previous year, you better have an answer. And if they move on, all the patience and the conversation that you took a pay cut and all that stuff goes kind of out the door. If he gets the raise, then it's like, wait a second. Like you said, was this put out there, the flirtation with another, you know, program or organization in the NFL? Because those rumors aren't going to go away. With specifically Harbaugh, they will always stay there in the conversation because of his past.
Yeah, but let me ask you a question, though, Kev. So he goes through years of hot seat. Like, what in the world are they waiting on to fire this guy? 1 year later, now everybody wants him. Mm. Let's just say the Philadelphia Eagles needed a head coach.
Uh-huh.
Do you want Harbaugh?
I'd be intrigued, but not really. I mean, I'd be intrigued by the possibility, but
that's what I thought was interesting.
I thought he did a phenomenal job with the 49ers, by the way. I also believe that there's a certain type of burnout period as well in the NFL, and then going back to college, and then maybe you can refuel and then come back. And, you know, this whole Michigan dance also is something that's personal for Harbaugh, right? It's unique to him because he's like, you know, my alma mater is calling me. I've got to go. They need me, and I want to come back and turn things around. I think Michigan's been very patient with him over the years to build what he wants to build to get to where he's at. But is there something also, not only just getting money, but like something in the background where he may feel like, is this the height of what I can do at Michigan? Like, I've done it. The three things I checked off, I didn't win a national title, but I got us to the playoff. Maybe I can't get over the top and get better than this. And it's I'm reaching the peak. Let's look at other options. Do you think that plays a role?
No, I don't think it plays a role for a coach. Not at a place like Michigan. Now, there are other schools where you would think maybe I reached my peak and it's time to move on to bigger, better options. Michigan is one of those schools that is in that upper echelon that there isn't great options above Michigan, just Ohio State. So I don't see that as this is as good as I can get. Now, he got to continue this. If this goes back to the Michigan we've seen before this season, then what did this season really mean? You know what I mean? You got your one Big Ten championship in there in the Harbaugh era. Like, what does it ultimately mean if you can't continue to do this? That's why it's interesting to me where a guy gets on a hot seat for a long time and then has one great season and then becomes, oh my gosh, that's the guy we need to have. That's very interesting to me.
Everybody panics, right? And you're a guy that says give things some time. I do want to ask you, because you've seen both sides. What do you think of Harbaugh as a college coach versus an NFL coach? Where do you think he can maximize his coaching abilities?
Harbaugh so he's interesting to me because what we see publicly, I don't know that that's what happens inside. You know what I mean? Like, I think that he tries to portray a quirky kind of, I don't even know how to explain him.
Awkward.
When you see him, like, answering questions and stuff like that. But I can't imagine that's the guy in the locker room. The guy that's had the success that he's had in coaching. I can't imagine that's the same guy that they get inside. So it's kind of hard for me to judge what he is. Before this season, while at Stanford, while at Michigan, his teams were good when they were the more physical football team and could go to tight ends and physically beat you up, run the ball against you, do some play action pass stuff. This year was a little different in what they were able to do offensively, and I was impressed. And I gave Josh Gattis a lot of credit for this. Mm-hmm. The offense was different this year than it's been in years past. They could actually do some things. Some reverses, some trick plays, some different things to open that offense up some. So I don't know how that translates, how it happens inside the locker room, but he's been successful, before these years of bad runs at Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the one thing we saw that I've been screaming for the last few years is what's the identity? And we saw the same identity that he had at Stanford this year with this Michigan team. And it feels like he has a quarterback. It feels like they can move on and say, after searching for 5 years with transfers and trying to put somebody in and plug and play, and can they be game managers? It feels like we've got a dynamic player at that QB position in J.J. McCarthy in the future down the road. And like you said, you know, two-headed monster when it comes to running the football. He's losing Hutchinson and Ajabo. But also, I thought Mike McDonald did a phenomenal job on the defensive side in this approach from what we've seen in previous years when it comes to adjusting in the second half and playing physical and being aware of teams that can open up the passing attack like we saw with Ohio State. Let's stay with this theme here because I want to transition to the matchup with Georgia and the rematch against Alabama with the Michigan-Ohio State ties that you experienced. You were at Ohio State from 91 to 94, the Michigan in your first year. There was a tie in Columbus in 92, and then you lose 28-0 in 93. Your senior year in Columbus, you've got Michigan coming to town. You're 0-2 with a tie. Help me understand emotionally and mentally where you're at, because that's where many of these Georgia players are at specifically. And not only is it like you've had a year to stew, you've had now just 4 weeks, and that's not feeling good. And now you got to get over this mental hurdle with Alabama and in a rivalry game.
Kev, I had 20 years of stew over getting over what you just brought up, and then you bring it back up on this podcast. Thanks a lot, Kev. I'm going to start going back and bringing up some of Temple's past records around here.
Wait, but yours has a happy ending. And yours has a happy ending because you win the final one.
Hey, 26. Hey, Taylor, was that necessary to bring up? I mean, he went year by year. You lost that one. Oh, yeah. Next year, you lost another one.
I think
you know what you're doing, Joey? But, Joey, you're proving my point. My point is that when you're losing to your rival this many times, and now you have an opportunity 5 weeks later on the biggest stage of your college career to play a revenge game in a rematch, where are you mentally considering you had to deal with that?
You could have asked the question just like that. Was it necessary to give
our audience
the year,
I provide the location, nuance.
What? Okay. All right. No. I can't wait till Ben Simmons comes in and takes down the 76ers in the playoffs. I want to be the first one to be like, Kev, man, your boy Ben didn't score a point. All right.
Hey, for our audience, by the way, whether I did this Michigan-Ohio State thing to Joey or not, he still was going to bring up Ben Simmons in a text chain down the road anyway, because he could care less. He makes sure to do that every few weeks.
That was really good.
So answer the question.
I want to give you a lot of credit for the way you acted like that was a professional question when really is trying to like kick me in the nuts. That's fine. So now I've been on teams before. Even when I was with the Seahawks, we were having trouble beating the Chiefs. Same difference. That feeling of they have our number. And it doesn't matter what happens, somehow, some way, they got our number. And so coming into this season, we get Georgia's just, they're the best team ever. I mean, you got me on a Sports Center talking about this, the best defense you've ever seen before. You're dropping all these stats on us. It's great.
Right. Your favorite.
So we went to the SEC championship game. Here comes Bama, comes in there and runs them over. So it's like, what happened? It gets in your head. And the minute it starts to go bad, you get a feeling of here we go again. Here it is. We thought we were better than them. We got the best defense ever. Bryce Young is in here slicing us up. We just watched Auburn's defensive line run over this Alabama offensive line. And here we are with the best defensive line we've had, and they can't get to Bryce Young. Here it is again.
Yep.
And mentally, that beats you down. And until you get in a game where some of these things start to go your way, you get off to a better start. You start to get some of the breaks falling in your direction. It's tough to break out of that. The start of this game, the first 4 minutes, when everybody's emotions are high on Monday night and you have all this energy and you haven't even settled into playing football yet. So those first 4 or 5 minutes of a football game, when you're emotionally like that, like you're playing on sheer emotion. You're exhausted, you're breathing so hard, you know, it's just crazy. Then you settle in. When they get past that emotion and settle in, it's going to be really important that Georgia hasn't done anything at that point to hurt themselves or let Alabama do anything to turn this game early on. Georgia needs to get off to a good start. For Georgia, good starts mean running the ball well, playing good defense. That's where their start is. It happened against Michigan, and they never looked back. That's where this game needs to start for Georgia to finally get out of this mental place that Alabama has him in. But let me say this to finish, Kev. Alabama does this to everyone. We talk about it like it's Georgia, but literally you could plug any team in that sentence where you got Georgia and they'd be saying the same thing. Nobody can consistently beat Alabama.
What's behind that? Is this a mental thing with Saban where he's just mastered some of these guys? I mean, for Will Anderson to keep on saying we are the underdogs, and it feels like he believes what he's saying because everybody else is like, come on, man. You're going for your seventh national championship since 2007. It's just to me, it's amazing the mindset that these Alabama players have, regardless of who it is, regardless of what class. It's like the best thing that happened was losing to A&M because it reset everybody and said, yo, I got your attention. Everybody doesn't think you're going to win anymore, right? What is the mindset that he does?
I mean, well, it starts with recruiting. He gets the most talent. That's number one. I mean, if you think about the things that they survive at Alabama, but losing coaches every single year, offensive defense coordinators every single year. Last year, you lose a Jalen Waddle, who could be the best rookie receiver in the NFL, maybe in the top couple. You still go out
and Devontae Smith, who won the Heisman, right? And Mac Jones, who could have won the Heisman, right?
Yeah, exactly. You do that, you still roll. This year they lose Mechie, and they still look great. So it starts there. Recruiting has been terrific. And also, what I've said about Alabama, when I visited there, what I love about Alabama is all they care about is what they do. They don't care about who's on the other sideline. That's why they, win so many games, because it's all about what they do. Everywhere else you go, they'll have however many days till we have to play so-and-so team. We care about this team. This is our rival.
Yeah.
So-and-so. Alabama has a mindset of we're Alabama. We don't give a crap who's the other side. We're going to go out and we're going to run them over and do whatever we do. And then Coach Saban, from a coaching standpoint, I enjoy listening to coaches. When I go to Ohio State's practice, I stand next to Ryan Day. I used to stand next to Urban Meyer. When I was in NFL, I used to stand next to Parcells in Dallas. I used to stand next to Belichick when I was in New England. I used to stand next to John Gruden. I wanted to listen to the coaching. When you stand next to those level of guys, their knowledge base is so crazy that they can coach every single position on the football field. And they're so locked in, and it keeps every kid locked in the entire practice. Like, you can't be screwing. Like, you would be over there with the kickers and the punters, right?
So ridiculous. Taylor, did you notice all the name dropping that he did? And you know what? It explains to me why I was in Miami, why you were standing next to me the entire time. Like, everywhere I went, Joey was right next to me. Joey, hey, can I get some food? Why you gotta be next to me, Joey? Can I watch this game? Why you gotta be next to me?
Exactly. So it would be like you would be over there kicking field goals, Kev. And and Saban is so locked in that he would literally be like, hey, Nagandi. And you know what I mean? Like, he's that locked in.
All right, before we get to our pick, I want to hear one specific thing from you as a wide receiver, because we talked about this, Boog, you and me, the week of when we were doing a little breakdown of stuff, and you took offense, because we're going to keep an eye on the secondaries of both teams, specifically Georgia after what they had to experience 5 weeks ago against Jameson Williams. And I think Alabama's secondary is also a key here in how they handle Bowers, the linebackers as well, considering that they're also, a couple of men down. You got really, really animated when we were talking about Jameson Williams And Boog brought up the idea of jamming up the wide receiver at the front so he doesn't get past you. How can Georgia and this secondary change what they did against Jameson Williams 5 weeks later?
Same thing Cincinnati needed to do. You have to rush Bryce Young. Everyone looks at the back end. Every good corner that's ever played football has had a good pass rush. Those two things have to go together. There's no such thing as a lockdown corner if he doesn't have a good defensive end that's putting pressure on the quarterback. Because if the ball doesn't have to come out quickly, you're in trouble. You can't cover for 5 seconds. So it starts up front for Georgia. And that's the problem the first time around. They didn't get any pressure on Bryce Young. It was crazy. You watch the film, Bryce Young literally was standing in the pocket like Tom Brady. And if you let him do that, it doesn't matter how many corners you got. It doesn't matter if you double cover. Jameson Williams is going to get open. So it starts up front. You got to get pressure. Got to make the ball come out quickly. And then you have to pick and choose your times when you're going to double. You have to mix your coverages up. You got to mix up whether you're coming up and bump a run, whether you're staying back. You have to disguise that. A talented receiver, if you let him know what you're going to do, he's going to beat you. So you have to mix it up, giving different looks. Look like you're going to back out, but come up. Look like you're going to be up, but run out. That's the only way you keep a really talented receiver off balance and sort of throw off his timing. Because honestly, as a defensive back, you're only trying to steal a half a second to throw off the timing of the route. Mm-hmm. The quarterback is expecting his receiver to be at a certain place at a certain time. That's why you see guys that are really good at yak. That's why you see the Aaron Rodgers guys that are really good, because they know where their receiver is going to be. Not where he is, but where he's going to be. And they put the ball where he's going to be. So a defensive back has to steal that half a second, that one step. If I can throw that off, I can throw that rhythm off, I can either make it incomplete, I can make it a bad pass, or I got a chance to get an interception. But if I don't throw off that rhythm, we're in trouble.
And to your point, if Bryce Young's rolling out, which actually is a benefit for him, and he's moving around and outside the pocket, that creates a little chaos and havoc where Jameson can kind of say, all right, I'm going to freelance and I'm going to go to specific spots. That helps Bryce Young. That rollout, yeah, we saw, if they don't have containment and pressure in the pocket, it's going to change the entire game for Georgia's defensive attack.
Joey and Kevin's Weekly Locks.
Yeah, let's get to our picks. Go ahead, Taylor. Break it down. Where were we at, Taylor?
Well, boys, it is the final game to pick on the Thursday edition of the podcast. Last week, Joey, you went 1-2. Joey 2-1. Kevin 1-2. Head to head. Joey correctly picked Baylor in Georgia. But Kevin had a 3-point lead. Joey only picks up one game, and that means this is officially over. Kevin is your Thursday pick'em champion for the 2021 college football season. Joe, you had a 5-game lead in week 7, and Kevin went on a remarkable run from there to eventually seal the deal. How does this make you feel, Joey? This is kind of remarkable.
Game lead. You coughed a 5-game lead. Joey's got us in mute for a reason.
This I know before I got on, you and Taylor got together.
No.
And you're like, I'm gonna bring up your record against Michigan. I'm gonna give the scores, the locations, all that. And then here comes Taylor giving the history of the picks. Nobody has ever given the history.
Taylor brought the hammer. He brought the hammer.
Because this is the championship game, I mean, it should be worth at least 5 points.
Nah, yeah, we ain't doing that. You ain't pulling those shenanigans.
This is exactly how a kicker would react, Kev. Anybody else would be like,
This is how Nick Saban would react. What's the scoreboard? We're going by that. You ain't changing the rules. Okay, who you got? Bama getting 3, Georgia laying 3. Who you got in this one?
Bama's getting 3.
Is that ridiculous? Yes, wow. They're the underdog again.
Wow, interesting. Good for them. Give me Georgia. Let's go.
Ooh, you're taking the points in Georgia. I can't bet against Saban. I'm taking the 3 in Bama in this one. And regardless, the great result about this is no matter what happens Monday night, you still lost.
Are you sure it's three?
Before I let you go, I just want to know how old are Booger's hands?
Hey, dude. First off, it's funny because Book texted me yesterday and said, bring up Kev's gray hair. I noticed you come in today with your hat. I noticed you come in today with your hat.
Gray is tucked up. I always wear my hat. And by the way, listen, Book already gave me the business about the hair talk. And then I explained the story about his hands and your specific reaction when you saw his hands. Let the audience know. I want your true reaction because it was real and it was authentic. When you, the first time you looked at his hands, you thought you were sitting next to your 90-year-old granddad, didn't you?
Well, the funny part is I try not to look at his hands because he got those crooked fingers, right? So I try not to look. And here I am sitting on the desk and I don't even know what you people start joking around. I turn and I literally thought Boog had on like one of those Halloween costume hands. I was like, what? I was like, dude, what happened to your hand? I literally thought something happened. And he looks at him like, what's wrong with that? And I was like, oh, well, I mean, I guess if you got 90-year-old hands, I guess nothing's wrong with that.
And the hands you get at a Halloween store when you're going out, you want to be the monster creeper.
It's like trying to be like the werewolf. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You get the werewolf claws. Like, that's what Boog's hand looked like. I was like, this is amazing.
Oh, nothing better. Joey, have fun, man. And, of course, Monday night, we'll be talking. Have fun with that, the national championship. All right, stay safe, buddy.
All right, man. All right, Kev.
It's time to empty the notebook on the ESPN College Football Podcast.
Great to have two guys, insiders in college football for us, weigh in on the matchup between Georgia and Alabama. That is Chris Lowe as well as Alex Scarborough, two guys who are fantastic over on ESPN.com when they talk about the SEC. And I'm really happy that we can get your perspective on this because, again, a month ago, everybody going into that matchup in the SEC title game, we see Georgia is the favorite. Georgia's been dominant all season. We walk out saying Nick has done it again. And how did he do it? And this was ridiculous how dominant they were. And Chris, I want to start with you because then after that game, all the doubts, you know, the first 12 games of what Georgia did didn't matter. All the doubts from previous years came back surrounding the Georgia team. And they did a really good job against the Michigan squad. But Alabama's a different beast in many ways, roster-wise, as well as the mental side. What's at stake here specifically for Kirby Smart and this roster when it comes to this game Monday night?
Kevin, you think the doubts were loud the last time? Let the dogs loose again. And they'll be loud, and they'll last for about 6 months until Georgia plays again. I think when you look at this rivalry and the fact that it's Kirby and Saban, Georgia, I mean, they're number one all season. I mean, we're talking a month and a half ago about how it's Georgia and everybody else, this generational defense. And then all of a sudden they go to Atlanta and Bryce Young and Bama just carves them apart. And you're right. They came back with a lot of pride, played very well against Michigan. But this game gets into the second half and it's a close game or Bama's ahead. You know those doubts have to start creeping in the back of everybody on that Georgia sideline's minds that here we go again. We just haven't been able to, you know, get these guys, and they've got our number. So that's the thing that I think you to answer your question, man, is, you know, every game's a must win when you get to this point. But for Georgia and that program, you look at all the guys they're going to lose on defense next year. They don't win this game. It's going to be pretty rocky, pretty stormy there in Athens, Georgia.
And Chris, I've brought this up a couple times this week that no matter how many, you know, recruiting cycles you win, no matter what you do in the regular season, no matter how many times you win the SEC East, this is the hurdle Kirby has to get over. And Alex, on the other side here, let's not forget Alabama's beaten Georgia the last few times down by double digits. And, you know, Nick loses his coaching staff. They go in and out. He loses players to the first and second round stars, yet they just reloads with these players who have a specific mindset, like Will Anderson, who comes into the game saying that they're an underdog. Like, how would you describe the dynamic of what Nick's been able to maintain with these specific players this year, especially coming off that A&M loss, to have that chip on their shoulder after that Georgia win and still carry it with them that they're the underdogs coming in?
Yeah, it's really interesting because most of the time Nick has to do acrobatics to try to convince this team that they have something to prove because they're always ranked number one. They're always undefeated. They're always they were favored in every game for like 5 years before the SEC championship game. So he's had him and him that staff for the longest time have had to convince players. There's no need to convince them now. They've heard all season long. Offensive line has heard how they're the worst of the Nick Saban era. The defense has heard how they got lit up against Texas A&M and against all these other teams. They have actual things that they can point to say, look, not only have you been doubted, you've been the betting underdog in not just one game against Georgia. You're going to be the betting underdog again. So there's that plus the belief that no matter what happens, like you said, we can be down against this team. We know how to beat this team. Those two things in tandem, when you're talking about 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids, that means something. They feel like they have Georgia's number, but they're also not sitting on their butts thinking they've got it made. So that makes for a really dangerous team. And they came out in that SEC championship game with something to prove and really threw a wrench in Georgia. And I'm really interested to see how they come out in this game, not the belief factor, because I think they have that, but what do they do differently in this game? They're going to have to throw a hook or something different here to throw Georgia off its game, because on the flip side, as Chris points out, Georgia might have felt like they were on top of the world until that SEC championship game. Maybe they weren't all the way in. I don't know, but they're going to be on Monday night. So it's going to be a really interesting battle of wills.
Chris, I've noticed that Stetson Bennett this week has kind of looked a little ornery. It feels like he's like, I'm fed up. I'm fed up of hearing about all this stuff. I'm fed up of all the criticism. I just want to play the game now. What do you need to see from Stetson Bennett in this game, considering the quarterback, whether it's fair or not, will get all the pub, positive or negative, and the pressure that it's coming into a game like this where he is 0-2 against Bama?
Well, the first thing I would say, Kevin, is Stetson Bennett wasn't the one turning guys loose in the secondary the first time, mm-hmm. letting guys go for 60 and 70 yards for touchdowns. The quarterback, as we all know, is a lightning rod, and Stetson's probably been more so because of his story. You know, the guy's, you know, nothing in recruiting. Nobody knows who he is. He grows up a Georgia fan, goes off to JUCO, comes back. And they bring in a guy like JT Daniels, you know, who's got, you know, all the measurables, got the big arm. And all year long, just like we see, the backup quarterback's the most popular guy, even on the number one ranked team in the country. Now, I think Stetson Bennett is smart enough and savvy enough that he's going to play his game. He's not going to try to do anything he can't do. He's got good guys around him. I love the way Todd Monken has used him this year. They've thrown to the backs. They've thrown to the tight ends. I think you'll see more of that against Alabama, try to get rid of the football, not keep him back there in the pocket, you know, and have to beat them throwing the football down the field, because that's not what he does. And again, I think Stetson is secure enough in his own skin that he's not going to try to be Dan Marino or John Elway in this game. He's going to do what he does. And I think you're right. I think he is sort of peeved that everything's been placed on him. But here's something not to underestimate. I was there in October, spent some time on campus, and that's right about the time that JT Daniels got healthy again. And talking to people in and around that program, and this is the thing I think we all lose sight of, media and fans, is the guys in that locker room believe in Stetson Bennett. That's their guy. There's never been any doubt in that Georgia locker room that he was the best guy for the job, and that hasn't changed, even despite what happened in Atlanta a month ago.
Alex, I want to get your prediction. Before we get that, though, this game will come down to what?
I think Chris hit on it in a way. It's Stetson Bennett, the plays he can make, but more specifically, who he's getting the ball to. Alabama has had a lot of trouble the last few years defending passes to the running backs and the tight ends. And Georgia has a lot of those guys. They might have the best tight end in college football in Brock Bowers. They've got three really good running backs. We saw what James Cook could do in the passing game against Michigan. I think that's where they might have their best bet to really try to expose Alabama's defense, specifically their linebackers and the middle of the field. But they're going to have to get help outside. And that's been the thing that, as we talk about Stetson Bennett and what he's capable of or what he's not capable of, I think we've kind of ignored the fact that Georgia has had no real difference makers at receiver for several years. They haven't had a Jameson Williams at that position. So what has he had to work with? I think they're going to have somebody step up at that position, whether it's a Ladd McConkey, a Jermaine Burton, somebody like that. It's more about Georgia in this game and what they can do differently offensively to jump out early in this game so they can have the confidence to say, hey, we can hang with this team. We can beat this team. This isn't going to be like every other year. Alabama's defense, while they have played really well, it still has some vulnerabilities. It's going to be very interesting to see how the tandem of Stetson Bennett and Todd Monken try to attack that.
So who you got in this one, Alex?
I feel like it's a law of averages. Eventually, Georgia is going to find a way to win. I love the confidence and the moxie of Stetson Bennett, and I still go back to that thing about Alabama defensively. They've got some issues. Alabama offensively, are they what they've been the last two games, or were they what they were for parts of the season where their offensive line couldn't protect Bryce Young? The running game was almost non-existent. I mean, Chris was there with me for that Iron Bowl against Auburn, and it was bad. Are they that team, or are they the team that we've seen the last few weeks? And nobody knows Alabama better than Kirby Smart. Nobody has a more talented defense than Kirby Smart in Georgia. And they're playing with that edge. I think they find a way, but man, it's really hard to go against Nick Saban. I just think like maybe this is finally Georgia's time.
Yeah, one thing that they've done really well too is they take your biggest weapon away. And Bowers had 10 catches in Atlanta. So I would think that he would be the focal point. Hey, let's take this away along with the running attack and see, can you beat us on the outside with a guy like Pickens and Burton? Chris, this game will come down to, and your prediction?
So this is rat poison times that you're telling me one way or the other?
Yes, sir.
You know, I'm an old boxing fan. You know, I grew up in the Sugar Ray Leonard Ali days, and there's that old cliche that you got to knock the heavyweight champion out to beat him. I got to see it to believe it, Kevin. I mean, this guy, Nick Saban, on that sideline in these stages is as good as it gets. The odds are against him that you can beat a team as good and talented as Georgia twice in a month span. But until they do it, you know, he's 0-4. Kirby's 0-4 against Nick. I got to go with the Tide.
Yeah, especially when they can walk in there saying, we're really the underdogs. Vegas and everybody else doesn't believe in us. That goes a long way with 18 to 22-year-olds who carry that entire theme as their five stars. Chris, Alex, we appreciate it. Have a great time on Monday night. Let's hope we have a great game. That's all we want. We want a great game, something better than what we saw in the semifinals. Appreciate you guys. Big thanks to Chris and Alex and, of course, Joey. Really fun podcast with their perspective to get you ready for Monday night. And before we go, a reminder, you can listen to the national championship game this Monday, January 10th on ESPN Radio. Tune in 7 p.m. Eastern time for full coverage. And the ESPN College Football Podcast will be back Monday morning. Paul Feinbaum, Matt Barry giving you one last look at this Georgia-Alabama matchup. We're also coming back later in the week, too, with our recaps as well as turning the page and moving forward. I know turning the page is recent. David Pollack, but we'll do our own little, hey, let's look ahead and let's kind of recap what we saw from the 2021 season. Big shout out to Taylor Schwenk, our fantastic producer, who's making sure all this happens. And enjoy the weekend and enjoy Monday night.